Major League Baseball players have set a deadline for their contract negotiations with owners, according to the Washington Post. The paper says the players agreed to strike if no agreement is reached by August 30th. Negotiators are said to be making progress, but so far there's no resolution on how teams share revenue and whether to rein in escalating salaries. Other major sports have been more aggressive in dealing with these issues. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Baseball's economic problems are not new. A Blue Ribbon panel appointed by the commissioner warned 2 years ago that a growing gap between rich and poor teams jeopardized the game's future. Columnist George Will, who served on the panel, says the issue is not how much money baseball brings in, there's plenty of that, but how the money is divided up.
Baseball's problem is that it has an economic model that not just predates television. It predates radio. It predates the internal combustion engine. Baseball's basic economic model is what it was when the National League was founded in 1879.
That old-fashioned model was on display last week when the San Diego Padres hosted the Philadelphia Phillies. 22,000 fans bought tickets to the game, which was also carried on local radio. 80% of the money generated was kept by the Padres. 2 days later, the Padres were on the road, and San Diego's pro football team took over the playing field. Same stadium, very different economics.
Live from Qualcomm Stadium, this is Chargers Football.
Unlike baseball, the majority of football's revenue comes from national television contracts. As sports economist Andrew Zimbalist points out, that money is shared equally. About $75 million for every pro football team.
In other words, New York Giants get $75 million, and the Green Bay Packers, based in northern Wisconsin, in a city that has just over 100,000 in population, also get $75 million.
That equality helps make even small market teams more competitive. In addition, the National Football League gets 40% of the money from every ticket sold, and that's also evenly distributed. Altogether, these shared revenues make up about three-quarters of each football team's total income. In baseball, it's just the opposite. Three-quarters of the average team's revenue comes from local sources that are not shared with other teams. The result is huge differences in the amount of money different teams make and what they can afford to pay their players. Last year, the New York Yankees' payroll was four times the Montreal Expos. And while a big payroll doesn't guarantee success, it's a good start. Columnist Will notes, since the last strike 8 years ago, every World Series game has been won by a team in the top 25% of the payroll standings.
It's simply not healthy for a sport to have a half or more of its teams go to spring training every year, knowing that they do not have a realistic hope of playing in the postseason.
Even if a poor team does well for a little while, its stars are likely to bolt to a richer team, like Jason Giambi leaving Oakland for the Yankees. Will notes the Yankees will make more from local broadcast this year than Oakland and six other teams combined. But he argues it's a mistake to consider that New York's local revenue.
If the Yankees played 162 inter-squad games, I could see them saying this is all local revenue and we're going to keep it all. But when the Yankees play Tampa Bay or the White Sox, they're selling Major League Baseball.
Most owners want to require wealthy teams to share more of their revenue. Not just 20%, as they do now, but as much as 50%. Sal Galatiotto, who runs the sports finance group at Lehman Brothers, says that should make the league more competitive, but only if the poor team owners are required to spend the extra money on players.
If you just give the money to the small market teams and they take it and put it in their pockets and don't reinvest it in baseball operations, it won't affect competitive balance at all.
Owners have also proposed a luxury tax on the biggest payrolls to help offset superstar salaries. Both football and basketball already limit player salaries. In baseball, the sky's the limit. The players' union is reluctant to change that or to see too much revenue sharing. And economist Zimbalist says players have every reason to be cautious. Still, Zimbalist says there's more pressure than ever for players and owners to reach a compromise.
In the year 2002, unlike 1950, baseball has a lot of competition. Baseball was alone on the sport's cultural pedestal. In 1950, didn't really have competition from the NBA or the NFL or the NHL. In 2002, it has intense competition from all of those.
And if baseball wants to compete successfully, it may have to follow the example of those other leagues' economics. Scott Horsley, NPR News, San Diego.